With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The American Protection Bureau, voted number one best on Long Island for all your security needs. Call 631-390-9050. That's 631-390-9050. APB.
You need a body shop? You need engine repair? Auto Excellence, collision specialists, 631-261-6420. That's 631-261-6420. Auto Excellence. Jimmy, I gotta take a dump.
What?
No, I mean I need a dumpster.
Well, for all those needs, you need to call Big V Dumpster Rental, Long Island, New York, 631-900-DUMP.
Elm Logistics, for all your logistic needs, call 631-299-3595. That's 631-299-3595. Elm Global Logistics, pride, performance, and partnerships.
The Monty and the Pharaoh Show is brought to you by...
Because wine is your second favorite four-letter word. California wine, New York attitude, good fucking wine.
Yeah.
Tired of that same old breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Same old tasting scrambled eggs, burger, that dinner steak, ribs, or pork chops? Why not add a little bit of spice or just a touch of heat to make the difference? Change that scrambled egg with a little bit of Johnny Fabulous's John Cena Sr.'s Million Dollar Jalapeno Hot Sauce. Great on burgers, steaks, chops, and those barbecued ribs.
And Nitro's Garage, for all your automotive needs. Call 646-675-2349. That's 646-675-2349. For all your automotive needs, Nitro's Garage, ask for Jack.
Do you treat your dog as part of the family? Well, so do we. So why not celebrate your pup's birthday with the ultimate party box? Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Party Pup Info, and let us make your pup's party or any celebration perfection.
M&J Video Games and Collectibles. Sport and non-sport cards, wrestling items, autographed items. We buy, sell, and trade. M&J Video Games and Collectibles, located at 1049 Queen Street, Southington, Connecticut. Call us at 1-860-479-9223 or 860-93-GAMES. M&J, Video Games and Collectibles.
welcome everyone to this week's edition of Wrestling Remembered. This is a show that takes you back in time as we explore the pro wrestling world of yesteryear. I'm your host and moderator, Joe What a Day Lowry. Happy Friday out there. I am joined by my esteemed colleagues. Let's go around the horn. We got the guy who's next to me, who is the jack of all trades, master of none, SO Bruce Butler. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, what's going on, Joe? What's going on, guys? How's it going, Phil?
Hey, B double.
There you go. And of course, let's keep on going down the road. We have the president of Thursday Night Wrestling, Mr. Phil DeCesare. Phil, welcome.
Wrestling fans around the corner and around the world, welcome to Wrestling Remembered.
And there you go. And the man who's just always a fixture on Monty and the Pharaoh channel, he is known as the player, Mr. Benny Scala. Welcome, Benny.
Welcome. 24 hours removed from the screw job in Playaville, where Bruce has turned me from Bruno Sammartino into Abe Knuckleball Schwartz.
Uh-oh. Oh,
I think I'm on the wrong panel for this one. Where's Dan? Dan!
And of course, I want to give a special hello to the chat room. It looks like it's already bumping and grinding out there. So welcome everyone watching live and of course on the replay. Hey, do us a favor while you're at it. Hit that subscribe button, hit the share button, hit the likes, comments, all that stuff. Let us know you're watching, be a part of the show, and we welcome everybody to the show. Now, folks, let's address the elephant in the room real quick. How about that interview last night with on Monty and the Pharaoh, Mike Monty interviewing Missy Beefcake? What are your thoughts on that? Anybody, please tell me what happened last night.
My monitor is still hot to the touch. I mean, that was sizzling.
What can you say about that? That was quite a tell-all there, especially some of those stories about between Beefcake and Hogan, and there seems to be a lot more to be told.
There's a lot to unpack. Let's just say that 88 minutes of names. I've never heard so many stories and so many things we probably didn't need to know about, like SSI checks and well-being checks and all this other checks. And I was like, oh my goodness. But let me just show you. The highlight for me was, we went to the same high school. In case you didn't see this part last night, this one kind of freaked me out.
Joe Lowry says he went to high school with you at North Quincy High. He graduated in 87.
Come on!
That's what he said.
Come on! Who is this? Where is he?
He's one of our hosts on one of our other shows. Do you remember that name? He says you were about a year younger than him, I think, if that's what he says.
I dated Keith Smith. Does he remember Smitty?
I don't know, he'll have to respond on the chat. But while we're talking...
Oh, my God. How's everybody's ears? You all right? Ears ringing
on that one? I'm glad I'm not Smitty.
And I'm telling you, there's a Smitty, and I think, Phil, we were chatting last night in the chat room. There's a Sully. There's a Mick.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Did you go back and check her out in the yearbook?
I think there was... I got to look it up. I mean, she's originally from Jamaica Plain. She moved to Quincy, I guess, when she was younger. She went to the same middle school as me, and then she went to the same high school. I think she was like a year younger than me. I'm not sure. I gotta look it up. But I think her last name was DeGloria back then, before it was Caruso.
Was she the centerfold in your yearbook or what?
No centerfolds in the yearbook, that's for sure. All right, so enough about that. So, anyways, folks, welcome to Wrestling Remembered. This week, we're going to be tackling a subject that pretty much changed the way wrestling was broadcast into everybody's homes, the cable TV boom. For me personally, 1982, I saw the truck rolling down my street, lining the streets with cable wire, and the only thing I was interested in at that time was wrestling in MTV. And lo and behold, a few years later, they all got together and so forth. But we'll just start off. Bruce. Yeah, what cable? I know you're a little bit younger than us and all that. I know the other two got a lot to say, but I want to get what you had to say first on what is your first recollection of cable TV and pro wrestling?
You know, it would be the end of All-Star Wrestling and then the beginning of going from the small taped arenas, which I got to go to a lot when I was a youth, right. and then all of a sudden it went from that USA Network thing to Wrestling Challenge, and it was one week it was small arena, next week it was huge arena, and after that I never saw a major show at the Civic Center again, and it was always those horrible B shows.
Yeah, and I got a quick graphic here of a lot of the wrestling action back then. You mentioned two of them, Championship Wrestling and All-Star Wrestling. As you can tell, what was it, the Hamburg Fieldhouse? Where was that? Where were those taped at?
Yeah, and Allentown at the Agricultural Hall.
Yeah, the Agricultural Hall, I remember that.
Championship, yeah.
That was always a good deal there. But Phil, we're pretty much the same genre, so to speak. What is your first recollection of cable coming in, and what were your first shows that you watched via cable?
Well, first of all, it's funny you say that, Joe. We would see the trucks in the neighborhoods because cable would come to town and go by neighborhood or from neighborhood to neighborhood.
And the sales rep would come right behind. The sales rep had the big binder.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want to watch? And I'd be like, whoa.
Yeah. So a friend of mine got cable before we did, and he was several blocks away, and I used to deliver the newspaper, strangely enough, to his house. So I would stop over and watch Georgia Championship Wrestling for a spell, and I just couldn't wait to get cable. Right. I made a deal with my parents, actually. I said, if we get cable, I'll use my paper route money and pay for it. And you know how much it was each month back then?
It wasn't much.
For basic cable? $8.95.
Cheap. I remember cable.
Amazing. Yeah.
It was nothing.
240 what this month?
Yeah. I know, right? Yeah. Well,
then again, you only had 25, not even 20. It was not more than 30 channels because I remembered channel 12. I used to remember it. This is sick now for me.
No.
Channel 12 was M12V and VH1 was VH21. So I know there weren't more than 25 channels on the cable box. So
yeah, ours might have gone up to 40. And Joe, the first box, at least that we had, there was no remote control. We had a little slider on the box, a little slider that went down. So you'd actually have to get up and slide it down to the channel.
Mine had 12 buttons along the top and then three different levels. So there was 36 channels. I just remember because 36 was MTV and 24 was Nickelodeon.
And you put the old beer can aluminum under there and underscrambled the channels that you weren't supposed to be watching. I remember that.
Boy, don't you remember that, huh?
Well, yeah. Benny, the player, chime in. Yeah. Well, obviously, you grew up in the era of totally no cable. And then how old were you when cable TV came around?
Yeah, so, grew up watching wrestling on UHF. Starting in 1968. Yeah. And I think around 74. That was on a Spanish station, so the entire New York metro area wrestling was on a UHF channel. And in 74, I think, the other Spanish station in it was WXTV out of Paterson, New Jersey. Channel 41 started showing the Olympic wrestling from the Olympic, NWA Hollywood. But then Cablevision, I believe, came to Long Island in 1975. So I believe, and it's been so long ago, geez, I was going to say, you know, we didn't have a remote. I had notches on my cave because, you know, that's how old.
I agree. Yeah.
I think the first one that I saw was Georgia Championship Wrestling from the Superstation, I believe. And then soon to be followed by Championship Wrestling from Florida. And you talk about, like, both of them were polar opposites from the WWWF. Georgia was very subdued, you know, a lot of technical stuff. Florida, I mean, when Kevin Sullivan came to Florida, it was, I mean, that was off the chart.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was because of the New England region. We didn't get, the only thing that I totally recall, obviously, even before cable, Phil, you could probably attest to this because you're from the Boston area, that World Class Championship Wrestling from Texas was streamed in on a UHF channel.
Channel 25,
Channel 25, but then when cable came around, that's when I finally got my dose of 6:05 to 8:05 on Saturday nights on TBS, Georgia Championship Wrestling, then World Championship Wrestling. So I never saw the Florida wrestling unless there was something going on, if they showed a vignette or a match that involved, like, you know, a title change or something. That's when they said, we'll take you down to Florida and you can take a look at this and all that. We didn't get the Florida programming like Benny did.
Yeah, we didn't.
No different.
You know, you're talking wrestling from the Olympic Auditorium. I would have loved to have seen that. That would have been something.
That was in the days of Blassie, Tolos, and then a guy named Jabba Rook, which was my first WTF moment because I see this guy. I think, damn, that guy looks just like Johnny Rods. And he's even, by God, he's even got JR in his boots. But it can't be. Of course, it was. And, I mean, he was huge in Los Angeles. He even won that the annual battle royal.
Yeah.
And so which, you know, guaranteed anyone who won a gigantic push. But the only problem was, I think his name was Mike LaBelle, did not make good on the money he promised Johnny, so he went back to New York.
Yeah, the chat is really lively right now. A lot of people are chiming in. Foxhole Willie, I do believe, is from Massachusetts, Phil. Do we know? He's talking about world-class championship wrestling from Texas on Channel 25, so he knows about that.
He knows about it, absolutely.
Charles Wilson, how about that brief stint with Southwest Championship
Wrestling? Oh, yeah, that was great.
Kelly Blanchard, Adrian Adonis for the title. That was a big deal then.
Blood and guts, man. Blood and guts on Sunday morning. It was really good.
That's when I learned how to pronounce Bruiser Bob Sweetan.
Yeah.
Not Bruiser Bob Sweetan, but Bruiser Bob Sweetan. I don't know who the announcer was.
Steve Stack.
Steve's, oh, wow, there you go.
Bruiser Bob Sweetan was the original Buck Zumhoff, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, he became Mr. Piledriver Bob Sweetan after
that. Yeah, that's right.
And I almost ordered a T-shirt, and I'm so glad now in hindsight I didn't order his T-shirt.
Right.
Now, given what's, you know.
I don't want to wake Bruce from his slumber up there. He looks like he's deep in thought. But, Bruce.
I'll type it on the chat room there.
Now, one of the things that you've mentioned on previous shows and obviously tonight, you got to go to the tapings for WWF at the Fieldhouse?
Unfortunately, I don't remember a lot of the earliest ones. But, yeah, they were right over in the Mid-Hudson Civic Center. And you know, so many memorable things happened there. I mean, the most memorable one for me was when Paul Orndorff turned on Hulk Hogan and in between WrestleMania 2 and 3 there. And that big vignette leading up to the cage match. And that was really the last big one from the Civic Center. But before that, I have vague recollections, but I had seen the Andre got his hair cut there. Randy Savage was introduced there. He introduced Elizabeth there. There were so many things. And
they had a tough TV schedule, right? Did they tape like X amount of shows in one day or whatever?
It was kind of funny. It was one of the first things that made me understand kayfabe, because a lot of times they would tape weeks worth of stuff and you wouldn't quite understand what was happening. When you watch it on TV, it's like, oh, now that makes sense. Yeah. You know, the whole thing with Hulk Hogan and Paul Orndorff was taped on that night, all the Flower Shop episodes, everything. But without the phone call to Hulk Hogan that Paul Orndorff had that had supposedly taken place in between, nothing else made sense. So like, there was no congruity to the angle. And then all of a sudden watching it on TV, it unfold for real.
Right. Right. So one of the things that always impressed me was, and I don't know how they did it, because Phil coming from the Northeast, Benny in the Northeast, you had your Madison Square Garden shows, Spectrum, Boston Garden, Main Civic Centers, up and down.
Capital Center in DC.
Capital Center. All the interviews they used to do, those interviews that would go on between the matches, you know, coming up, the Boston Garden, Killer Khan versus Andre the Giant stretcher match. You know, I wonder how many interviews they had to do for each. Like, that must have been a lot. If that was a whole day's worth of taping.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think of, like, you know, the WWF, they had to be doing for the Garden, the Spectrum, in Baltimore, Pittsburgh, you know, Boston, all the major venues. They had to be doing at least, like, 10 or 15 different sets of interviews.
Yeah, and of course, who can forget Howard Finkel? It was always right after, during the first match, no sound for like 2 minutes. It'd be like, if you're in the West Roxbury area tonight, All Star Wrestling. I said West Roxbury because Foxhole Willie is from West Roxbury, by the way. So welcome.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, Beth Harper's in the house. Everybody's here tonight. Nice, hey, Matt Hall.
Yeah, we got a full house in here.
Awesome. All right, thanks for joining us. But I always wondered with that stuff. Now, I pulled that graphic up earlier. Here's the graphic of most of the stuff that was out on cable at the time in the early 80s. We'll start off Georgia Championship Wrestling, 605 to 805 on TBS was a big deal. That was followed up by World Class Championship Wrestling after that. And then, of course, World Class. That was huge. Real quick, let's talk about that. Anybody, Phil, Benny, I'm not sure, Bruce, what was your first recollection of seeing World Class for the first time from Texas?
I think it was one of the Star Wars cards from like 1982. They had those holiday Star Wars
Christmas
cards.
Night,
and I was
right?
totally blown
night,
away
yeah. yep.
by the quality of the matches. And, you know, one of the feuds I remember that they're now reprising is when David Von Erich was feuding with Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a stipulation in the match that if Garvin lost, he'd become a ranch hand on David's ranch.
We haven't heard that before, huh?
And so he and Sunshine were on there, you know, baling hay and washing the horse and the dog and everything.
Precious was the other valet, right? Wasn't Precious?
Yes, yes. That was the original one. Patty, Precious was his wife who came after, but Sunshine is the first one.
Yeah.
But now we just saw this role, this angle reprised in WWE right now with what's Tiffany her name Stratton. Working Tiffany on the
Stratton.
Ranch?
Tiffany Stratton.
Yeah, it's Tiffany Stratton. So they
I knew just, exactly. It's funny how you mentioned that, Phil. Everybody, I when I saw that stipulation, I said, well, Tiffany Stratton's going to lose because she's the bombshell who's going to go in the farmhand.
Yep.
And there's going to be manure involved.
Yep.
There's going to be cow dung, whatever, all and, that stuff. And, hay and all
poop
that
and the whole deal. Oh, was, yeah.
And you knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But she hasn't been on NXT since then. It's only been 2 weeks. I have a feeling she's going to pop up at the Rumble. I think she's going to be a surprise entrant and so forth. But
yeah.
So as we move along, UHF channels slowly become obsolete when the cable channels introduce. How can we forget this infamous day, July 14th, 1984, affectionately known as Black Saturday? I remember tuning in. This one took me totally off guard. I was totally shocked that Vince McMahon was standing in front of a World Championship Wrestling sign on TBS and they basically took over the 605-805 slot, and I was surprised by this for over 8.5 months, even with all the complaints and everything that was going on. Well, Benny, you got a response to that? Did you see that take place?
Yeah, and my understanding is that Vince actually violated the agreement because he was actually supposed to have studio wrestling.
Yeah.
The same as the people were used to seeing, but instead of doing that, he just used, you know, they show tape matches. So I think that's why it eventually fell apart. But yeah, I mean, it was surreal. I mean, and couldn't he have worn a better suit? Jeez, come on.
Bruce, you remember that?
No, unfortunately, that was a little before my time. I didn't start getting to watch Georgia Championship Wrestling for a couple more years. But, you know, I've definitely gone back and watched my fair share of those of what's available on Peacock. But it's missing so much.
Yeah, it is. And Phil, what is your recollection of that?
I remember Freddie Miller, a longtime voice, the guy who used to announce the matches on the Georgia programs, introducing Vince McMahon. And again, this is before internet, before really dirt sheets. And I couldn't tell you, I wouldn't be able to tell you what a dirt sheet was back then.
But when
he introduced Vince and Vince walked out, my jaw hit the floor. And I was pissed, you know? Yeah. I'm a WWF fan always, but...
Sure.
Love Georgia wrestling. And again, it was the end of studio wrestling. And that was my first exposure to the intimacy of that sort of setup. And I really, really was really loving Georgia wrestling.
And that's a good segue, the end of studio wrestling, because it was right that time Hulkamania comes along and it was no more Joe McHugh and, you know, no more Gary Michael Capetta. It was like all these announcers, like I think King Kong Mosca was an announcer for a while with some people, and they were taping these shows in like Toronto and the Midwest and the, you know, all these places that it went on like a bigger level. Like it was almost like, let's take you now to Los Angeles, California, as this takes place. It's like Los Angeles, WWF goes to Los Angeles. What are you talking about? You know, they did then now because of Hulkamania and all that stuff. But, Bruce, that kind of probably segues to your time, right? When you no more studio wrestling, it was all arena wrestling now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You turn it on. What's your first recollection of all that stuff?
It was right in the beginning. I mean, one of the first big angles on TV was the crowning of Harley Race.
That was one of the
biggest things that came out of that. But one of the things for me that is amazing is the amount of wrestlers that had wrestled on, say, All-Star Wrestling and all the ones between, say, 79 and 82.
Yeah.
But then between 82 and 84, we're supposed to have, like, these blinders on. And then they all come back as new characters for this the golden age of wrestling through WrestleMania and beyond.
Right.
It's amazing. And the more and more I see of that, it's kind of funny. You know, watching Hulk Hogan wrestle Hacksaw Jim Duggan in, like, 1980 was like, wait a minute. What? But
and one thing that we didn't get was UWF, Universal Wrestling Federation. Jim Ross was announcer for that. Never really saw that on cable unless you were down south. I mean, like, again, that's the regionalized cable thing aspect of it. I never saw it. Phil, did you see it in the movie?
Yeah, we got a taste of it on the USA Network for a brief spell.
Oh,
we had it for a little while. It had a home at USA Network. wasn't I don't know what the machinations were behind the scenes, but okay. While it was on, it was good. It was from the Irish McNeil Boys Club, which is where they did all their filming. And again, we saw a music video. It was the age of music videos, and I remember a Rock and Roll Express music video set to Kiss's Rock and Roll All Night and being totally impressed with that. You know, it just made me a greater fan of the Express as well. And it was a great program too. And again, a different style. And you know, this, all these different shows, of course, they emanated from different areas of the country, but they kind of gave us a taste of the culture, you know, the fan base, the kind of wrestling. I mean, it was different in each area of the country. And it was really that variety that we had back then. And now it's just so homogenized, you know. I really love that whole regional feel, and I mean, you know, the dialects of the announcers. I mean, everything, you know.
You know, one thing I did forget to capitalize on when I growing up, 81, 82, when cable TV came around, the USA Network was prevalent, was you got to see the Madison Square Garden matches a month later. There was always a month. They always were a month ahead or behind or whatever. And my Tuesday nights changed forever. I was like, oh, my God, another night for wrestling. 8 to 11 every once a month on Tuesday, the USA Network. So if there was a title change that they showed on All-Star or Championship Wrestling, I was writing the TV guide waiting to see, because then I could actually watch the whole match, because they only showed highlights on All-Star Wrestling and all that stuff. So that was kind of a coup for me with cable television. And that's a, do you remember that, Benny, watching those shows on the USA Network?
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that cable was kind of a mixed blessing. So for us, you know, purely from a fan viewing perspective, it was great because, you know, I went from, you know, WWF, then now I'm watching Georgia Championship Wrestling from Florida. Then I'm watching Southwest. I'm watching World Class. After a while, I even got to watch AWA. Thing like, man, I'm in wrestling heaven. You know, and it's so funny now that you have to be Team WWE or Team AEW. It's like, man, just keep bringing it. And one of the things I noticed was, like I said, you know, Georgia was almost like watching high school wrestling. It was so clinical. Yep. And Gordon Solie was so deadpan, you know, but at the same time, then he announced for Florida, and it was, you know, it was like a crime scene there with Kevin Sullivan and Billy Graham and you know, Bob Roop, you know, and I guess Nancy Benoit, I think, was she the Fallen Angel? Or
yes, she was. Oh boy.
Every week there was carnage on that show, and like you never knew what was going to happen. But, you know, but the flip side of that, I think, was that was the first tear in the envelope of kayfabe, because now you could see where people like, oh yeah, I know that guy from he was in World Class as this, and now he's this, which we never knew before. I mean, we were kind of segregated in our own little niche watching our WWF, and if somebody came in with a different name, unless we were a diehard, you know, the follower of the magazines, in all likelihood, we had no idea where they were. But that was the first unpeeling of the onion of kayfabe, I think, that now.
I know one of my first ones was the kayfabe thing and all that stuff was the Jimmy Snuka, Ray Stevens angle. And what was it, a couple of years before them, they were tag team champs, right? In AWA or NWA?
NWA, yeah.
Mid-Atlantic, and I was like, wait a minute, they're supposed to hate each other. What's going on? So, like, I was kind of figuring it out then, but it took wrestling magazines and cable TV to bring me up to speed, so to speak. So, yeah.
That's a great topic, too.
Yeah.
How did the magazine, like, I have the magazines from the 80s, but back in the 70s, how did they tiptoe over those different people in different territories, you know, show, because it had to, you know, people had to start realizing how they tiptoe around it.
They really didn't, though. Everything was, you know, they didn't. They just ignored it, and most people just went right along with it. You know, I guess if you were like a diehard fan, like I was, you know, when in 75, when I saw Rods, but even like I thought about that for a couple of weeks, like, how could that be? That's impossible. I can't be Johnny Rods. But like, how could it not be? You know,
I think a lot of them were in cahoots. Bill After told me a couple of stories that the wrestling magazines were welcome back then into locker rooms and so forth, because it was good exposure. It was actually the only exposure pre-cable were wrestling magazines. So Bill After would do his thing and go and take pictures and all that stuff.
You'd want to get your picture in wrestling.
They were pretty careful with the stories. I know reading the magazines growing up, they would have like arena reports you know, and you'd see this one match, you know, you'd have a whole pullout of matches, but they were careful in what they selected.
They really guarded, they protected the business big time.
And and as we know, they really heavily edited things. I mean,
we know that
Benny's favorite wrestler really wasn't Spiro Sarion, right? As they told us from the
I still to this day, that was 55 years ago. Why did they change my entry from Bruno to Spear? They might probably because 99% of the people had Bruno.
Yeah, they probably wanted to mix it up there. Bit. Yeah. Well, they saw your address. They're like, oh, he must love Bruno. And then they put Spiros in there. Boom.
Yeah.
There you go. you got eyeballs on you now.
They thought you were Greek or something. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, but even that, when you think about it, like, you know, two pages of the after mags were devoted to people who wanted pen pals to talk about wrestling. And it was such a trusting era that you could publish your address and, you know, after a little bit, you're going to start getting letters in the mail.
Now, Maria Davis is saying that in Pittsburgh growing up, they had wrestling on 7 days a week, sometimes four times a day.
Wow.
That's diehard stuff.
Well, they had the studio wrestling, right, with Bill Cardill.
Yeah. I never saw it, though. We didn't get that.
That's such a shame that they did not save those tapes.
Oh, now, I'm sure WWE has property that rights to it.
No, I think what they did back then, and this happened in a lot of the territories, they would just tape over the tape to save money.
Oh, God.
What a shame, right? I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me because I know I mentioned this before, but after interviewing Tito Santana and they brought the camera to the garden to watch him beat Morocco, they ran out of footage. They ran out of film, and they never caught the actual pinfall. So, you know, that's how it was early 80s. You know, you didn't know what was going on. It was, you know, there was no live TV or live cut-ins.
Everything was
pre-recorded and all that stuff. And, you know, you always got goosebumps because as soon as Vince McMahon and Pat Patterson took to the mic and says, we have a huge match coming up from the garden, you knew there was a title change. And I thought probably one of the biggest title changes I remember watching on TV getting that was December 26, 1983, when Bob Backlund lost
to
Iron Sheik. Microphone did not stop ringing to the point where my parents were like, what the hell is going on? I said, Bob Backlund lost the title. You don't know what – this is crazy. You couldn't believe what was happening. So, and, of course, that title change probably what happened about probably a week before, right?
Your cell phone's not going to start buzzing when Seth freaking Rollins loses the title.
My goodness.
When did you guys realize that Vince McMahon was more than just the commentator?
That's a good question.
I'd have to go right to WrestleMania 1.
Yes.
He was
85. Yes, sir.
And this is before the WrestleMania stories and all that stuff came out. But when I realized that when he got Hulk Hogan in there, Vince was everywhere, Phil, right? I mean, we remember he was everywhere. Vince was everywhere. He gambled the house on that WrestleMania because stories were told that he put every last dime he had into it. And if that failed, there'd be no WWE. There'd be nothing.
Yeah, and, you know, speculated earlier, guys, I recall that the two incidents that gained national attention were the Richard Belzer incident and the Dr. D. John Stossel incident. And again, we speculated that maybe this was kind of on purpose to kind of generate that heat and get more eyes to the product, you know. And then in hindsight, it really makes sense, you know.
Of course it does. Of course it does. Go ahead, Bruce.
I didn't realize it until one day I'm watching like the credits and stuff. And I'm like, Vince McMahon, executive producer. And then just started putting two and two together. And within a year, it was a steroid or some type of controversy that came out. And it was like, oh my God, he is it. Cause they kept, as a kid, you didn't realize, you know, he was just a commentator, interviewer. He just happened to be everywhere.
Right. I mean, over the years I learned, you know, we learned that he bought the Worldwide Wrestling Federation from his father for what, $1 million?
$1 million. Four payments of $250,000.
And obviously Vince was responsible for getting Hulk Hogan back because from stories and literature I've read, Hogan wanted to go make Rocky III and Vince Sr. was like, no, you have obligations. And he kind of just basically walked out on him. And he did the Rocky III thing, and then he went to AWA, and then, of course, Vince bought WWF, and, you know, the rest is history. But anybody can comment on that, guys. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of what – I'll always wonder what would have happened if Vern Gagne did put the belt on Hulk. I do think they would have lasted for a little while longer. I do think eventually that Vince would have, you know, thrown enough money at Hulk, and knowing Hulk – that he would have, you know, he would have taken the money and left. But I think it would have made AWA a little bit spicier for a little bit longer.
You know, I wonder too, speaking of things, if fate interceded in different ways, what if Captain Lou Albano wasn't on that flight with Cyndi Lauper, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't really, you know, make that connection. Yeah. And speaking, what became ultimately the Rock and Wrestling connection,
sure,
which I think has been, you know, I think the best connection ever, really, you know, and
that catapulted mainstream. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the perfect marriage. I mean, that's what boosted cable.
Yep.
It spiked MTV's ratings as well. So it was it was win-win. It was just
you sure it wasn't the Land of a Thousand Dances video that
I still have the album with the cassette tape in it too.
Yeah, what, the wrestling album? You get the wrestling album?
Yeah,
the Don Morocco's Pile Driver song and all that stuff.
Classic.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
But one of the glory parts about cable for me back in the day was Saturday nights after Georgia Championship Wrestling or World Championship Wrestling would ended. You got that lull. Nothing was going on. Of course, the first Saturday night in of the month in Boston, you go to the Garden. But I always made it home in time because I used to get WOR TV out of Secaucus, New Jersey, Channel 9. And I got to see the reruns of All-Star and Championship Wrestling from 12 to 2 in the clock in the morning. Betty, you're from New York. Did you remember seeing that stuff? Would that,
I'm going to say, let me check how many people are in the room here. So how many people are going to think I'm an idiot after I say this, but
all
right. No, no. I mean, the play is totally transparent. That's what she said. But on October 11th, 1980, I got married at St. Killian's Roman Catholic Church. It was a Saturday. I had my reception at the Knights of Columbus in Hicksville, New York.
Oh, wow.
Stayed at a Howard Johnson's in Plainview because I was going to catch an early morning flight to Disney World for my honeymoon.
Okay.
But what did I do at midnight? Three guesses. No, one guess.
We know.
Babies? You're making babies.
No.
Nope.
I'm sitting on the bed with a bunch of envelopes. Going, counting my wedding loot while watching wrestling.
Nice.
Wow.
That's so a fan, baby. That's a fan.
Howard Johnson's, huh? They don't have those.
The Hojos, yep.
You're definitely eating yourself now. All right.
Oh, yeah.
That's good stuff. Good stuff there. But, yeah, definitely with all that. Another thing that, Bruce, you could probably chime in on because you mentioned it, Saturday Night Live, something happened there. NBC decided to not show Saturday Night Live anymore. Vince McMahon saw blood in the water. He
friends with Dick Ebersol.
Develops a relationship with Dick Ebersol, and boom, all of a sudden we get Saturday night's main event at 11:30 at night on a set. We get an hour and a half of wrestling, which was, I found out, was taped earlier that prior to that evening, right? Wasn't it taped that evening and then they condensed it for the 11:30 showing? Do we remember that? Does anybody remember that? If that was
sometimes in advance.
Yeah, I know sometimes they were pre-taped well in advance.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was taped like hours before. Like
no, sometimes like no? days, okay. I think.
Right. I wasn't sure about that. All right. So that would make more sense.
Yeah.
I remember the one with Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. But that was about the first one. I don't really remember them. Yeah, you know, the first big one I remember that pops out in my head is Paul Orndorff, Hulk Hogan, cage match.
Oh, yeah. Both men landed at the same time, right?
Yeah. But that came out of an angle that, you know, that I had watched come out of the Civic Center. So that was that was so cool to see.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite episodes of Saturday Night's Main Event was right after Mania when they obviously Orton hit Orndorff in the back of the head with the cast. And he's on Piper's Pit. I think it was out of the New Jersey Meadowlands. And that was the first time I heard Orndorff yell, "Stay, sit," with Orton and Piper.
Yeah.
And that stood out to my and that was like 11:45 at night. I'm watching wrestling. It was like cable TV. Vince McMahon utilized every avenue possible with cable TV to get that product out there. But that's Saturday night's main event. That ran for a good couple of years, I think.
What was the average viewership?
Yeah, I was going to say, it got like really good ratings.
It was high. It was high because don't forget, you had that West Coast audience at the time. It was 11:30 Eastern time, but it was really, 8:30 on the West Coast. So you got that. You got a good crowd out there, especially kids who were Hulkamaniacs that wanted to see a glimpse of Hulk Hogan before they went to bed. You know, that was a coup de grace right there, all that stuff.
Yeah, you had every kid 10 years and up trying to watch that.
Now, Joe Will is saying Saturday night's main events and Clash of the Champions were like Bird versus Magic, must see TV in the 80s.
Yeah,
one right there.
Definitely.
Yep. And Captain Lou, Maria Davis, Lou Albano, Cindy Lauper made the right move with her hit videos. Girls Just Want to Have Fun. That blew up. Loved it. Yeah. Do you think with Lou Albano being in Cindy Lauper's video, do you think the Rock and Wrestling connection was already in motion there? Because there was no Hulk Hogan and all that stuff about that time. It was just more like, oh my God, Captain Lou Albano is in a music video.
You know, it was a New York thing too. I mean, I recall, and again, wrestling has always been popular, but just not mainstream popular. A lot of celebrities, you know, used to go to the MSG shows.
Sure.
Deborah Harry of Blondie was a big fan,
Yeah. You
know, but for the grace of God, it wasn't she who became the main connection to rock and roll, you know? And so it was a New York thing, I think, at least initially, but I think it was a difference maker. I think that was, that's everything right there, man. You know, yep. If we didn't have that, I don't think we'd be here today and, you know, at this level.
Who can forget Brawl for It All?
That
MTV, I think that was like on a Tuesday night or something.
We had that war to settle the score and then the other one. Yeah.
Albano turned face then because he got the record thing smashed over his head by Piper.
Great.
You talk about, like, I was, you know, obviously in high school then, and I kind of figured out, okay, wrestling is, you know, not real in some aspects. But when you put a program like that out where Dick Clark is making an announcement and Piper comes out and takes a glass thing and smashes it over the bottom. And I'll tell you to this day, if you watch the video, I don't think they told the cops at ringside that that was supposed to happen. Because they got in the ring,
right?
They were trying to get physical with Piper, and he was knocking their hats off and all that stuff. And I'm like, okay, somebody didn't tell somebody something that this was going to happen. Because those cops were in his face.
Wasn't there something with him pushing down Cindy Lauper too?
Where that grabbed up his leg and he kind of kicked her off, I think, Bruce. Yeah, she kind of elevated her.
He latched onto his ankle because I think he had just power slam David Wolf, right?
Yes, he did.
And then she's like, stop it. And the act of simulating was kicking was there, but Lauper was actually hanging onto his foot.
Right. He's just swinging his leg.
Swinging back.
Yeah.
Good television right there. Vince McMahon. And of course, with cable TV and everything going out, we must have saw that clip 1,000 times over the course up until WrestleMania.
You know, yeah, we did. And, you know, Dick Clark being a part of this,
yeah.
I don't know that he was clued in on exactly what was going to happen. I think that was I think he was pretty legitimately horrified by it and surprised too, you know. Yeah. And I think some of the best magic happens when, like, the announcers and some of the participants might not be totally clued in, you know.
Reaction, sure.
Yeah.
I think that cemented Roddy Piper with his status because he was gold in that. I mean, the comment with Geraldine Ferraro, I'll slap you in the face. You hear this on TV and it's like, then you got Gloria Stein. I mean, you got magazine editors sitting around the table. I mean, you talk about the crossover with insane. And then the war to settle the score when they had the interviews before, during and after the show, Joe Piscopo, Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
Obviously New York's finest and everything, but I was like, okay, something's going on here. Andy Warhol made an appearance.
Yeah.
I mean, Vince McMahon just pretty much opened the door and says, if you're in the entertainment world, come on in. Well, we would like to have a word with you. And
Liberace.
It was Liberace. I mean, that obviously leading up to the first WrestleMania. I mean, that was a star-studded event. It wasn't wrestling. I think wrestling took a back seat then. It was more about who's there and what's going to happen.
Then it became entertainment. Yeah. That's, you know, right.
It made it cool to be a fan, like for the first time in a long time. And I'm sure those things go through cycles, but really made it cool to be a fan. You're bragging about it. Like, oh, I've been watching this for years.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are slow on the draw here. Come on.
Now, another good one is to roll on the heels of cable TV. Bruce, I'm not sure if you know this, but before pay-per-views, everything was closed circuit television.
Yeah, my first WrestleMania that I saw was closed circuit.
I
just recently let go one of my most cherished possessions, which was the program from that day. The funny part about that was you could buy it at the newsstands weeks later for like $2. But on the day of the event, it was $8.
Oh, yeah. It was big money.
Wow.
I paid $20 to get in there to watch it and grab
a seat. Yeah, I think we had great seats for the big screen there. And
I go, what a concept. 15,000 people watching four-sided giant TV screens. I mean, you talk about like I didn't know what to expect when I got there, and I was like, wow. But of course, 85 comes around, WrestleMania 2. That was the first pay-per-view that WWE put out, and they made it a big-time thing because it was, three different locations they had. Vince was, you know, he was in it. He was in it with the cable for, obviously, the long haul. He knew the future was there, and going from closed circuit to pay-per-view, the rest is history and all that stuff. But that's incredible, absolutely incredible. But real quick, let's jump back on since the Iron Claw movie just came out, the Von Erichs and World Class Championship Wrestling. We talked about it, how it streamed in via UHF and so forth. One of the things that I was kind of perplexed at was because all this wrestling is coming into my house, we weren't able to see these guys live. We couldn't go to the Garden and see them and all that stuff. But I do remember when Hulkamania came along and all that stuff. Do you remember when they used to announce the matches for the following month, Phil, at the old Garden? I don't know if they did that at the Boston, at the Madison Square Garden, Benny, but at the
They did.
At the old Boston Garden at halftime there. Then they announced out of nowhere, I think it was summer of 85, the Fabulous Freebirds were coming to the Garden. And I was like, oh, my God, they're from World Class. What do you mean they're coming to the Garden? How are they coming to the Garden? Like, what's going on here? They no-showed that event, by the way, a month later. So did anybody get to see World Class Championship Wrestling live at all?
No.
No, they came to Lynn, though, Joe, I remember. And I'm upset that I didn't go. That was their one appearance. World Class came up to Lynn, Massachusetts.
The Manning Bowl?
The Manning Bowl, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and they had a really good turnout too, from what I understand. But
that's a good question. Yeah, that's because I never saw them live. I've never seen David Carey all when they were alive. I never saw them live, and that kind of bummed me out. Unless when Vince started buying up all the territories, then they would come. Like Carey Eric, I think was the only one that probably I saw live.
Yeah, me too. Texas Tornado.
I didn't see anybody else.
My favorite guy from WCCW was the originator, and I think he was the true originator of the super kick, gentleman Chris Adams.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
When I first saw that super kick, that was absolutely amazing to me. Yeah. And the way he did it, he did it to perfection.
And speaking of him, they're going to have that's one of the Dark Side of the Ring episodes, I believe.
Whoa. Oh, gentleman Chris Adams?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What a life he led. Yeah.
Yeah. He died young, too. My goodness.
45, 46. Yeah.
I was just watching Chris and Gino and Chris Adams against Kerry and Kevin. If the Von Erichs won, they got to trash Gino's Corvette, and they came to the ring with chains and hammers and stuff. Yeah, God, the stuff we saw back then with them, very innovative.
Those stipulation matches, they were gold.
Yeah,
they were good strap matches.
The hair match with Buddy Roberts.
Stuff like that.
And he wore the headgear for like 2 years. His hair never grew back. Like, what's going on? Why is this guy still bald? Like. But I do remember one thing that they did not show on WWF television back in the day. I think it was 85, was the first inaugural King of the Ring in Foxborough Stadium. I caught wind of that only because it was in the area in that Channel 4, 5, and 7. They covered it, but it was never shown on WWF programming. And I do believe Don Morocco was the first King of the Ring winner, right?
I think you're right.
It was at Foxborough Stadium. It was an outdoor event. First of all, I was flabbergasted with, what do you mean there's wrestling outside? Like, what's going on? This is the Northeast. How can you have wrestling outside? The only time I ever saw wrestling outside was, obviously, the Parade of Champions with Kerry Von Erich defeating Ric Flair at Texas Stadium.
They had a King of the Ring in Westboro, Massachusetts, at the Speedway, I think.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if it was like a dry run for this or what, but it was the one and only time because Westboro's kind of close to me. So I was really amazed. So it was an outdoor venue, you know. Wow. I guess a racing track, a speedway, but you're right. That was the first official King of the Ring there.
And there are some photos out there on the internet. There's a couple of them. Because I do want to say it rained either before, during, or after. And I think it was Morocco. I'm strictly going by memory, but Morocco and the Iron Sheik went at it.
For the you're right. I know there were some heels.
Two heels went at it for King of the Ring. And that's probably why they didn't want to break kayfabe back then. They were like, okay, well, we can't advertise this. But it was a great draw for the crowd. I mean, from the pictures, it looked like there was a good, 10,000 plus there, which is unbelievable.
Really great.
Outdoor wrestling in the Northeast. But
yeah,
that's incredible there. But Jason Kessler said, do you remember Spike Huber?
Oh, yeah. WWE champion.
Didn't he get the Bruiser's nephew or something, right? Or son-in-law.
Dick the Bruiser's daughter.
And then he pretty, but they kind of semi put him over in WWF. Not a whole lot, though. He was like a low mid-card guy.
Yeah, he came in on All-American Wrestling, I remember. That was the first time we saw him. I think it was from St. Louis or somewhere. But we saw him just a few times, I think.
Yeah, we really didn't touch upon that. But then, of course, Sunday Wrestling came along with All-American Wrestling on the USA Network at 11 o'clock in the morning. That was like, that totally blew my mind. Now we have wrestling on Sunday mornings? Like, you've got to be kidding me. Does anybody remember watching those episodes?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. That one lasted for a while, too, I think.
It had a good run on the USA Network.
It went into the 90s, I think.
Yep.
In fact, that was the first time Vince McMahon ever referred to Diesel as Kevin Nash. It was like a little sit-down, semi-shoot interview, and I was like, wow.
Unbelievable.
I always thought his name was just Diesel.
Diesel, the bodyguard, Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Ja Will says Dick the Bruiser had a medical emergency and a weightlifting accident.
Didn't he have
he ruptured his aorta or something?
Yeah. Yep.
Did that end his career or did he keep
it? He died. He died.
He was at home too. Yeah, like 62, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, and he was weightlifting at home.
I have something to throw out to everybody, though. I think the flip side to all of this with the cable. And I'd love to get people's comments about this, including the people in the room, was kind of like the house shows were slowly died out, right? Yep. And, I mean, I went to several house shows. Some of my best memories were going to those house shows. The last one I ever went to was in Hagerstown, Maryland. I think it was in 87.
Oh, wow.
It was Billy Jack Haynes versus the Iron Sheik in the main event. Great show. But, I mean, that's kind of the flip side of wrestling going national is we lost that. We lost the localism as fans.
Well, because Vince saturated the product. He saturated the market with the product. So
we got a lot of it long distance, but we lost the intimacy that we used to have.
No, definitely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you look back to the days of when, the Saturdays at the Boston Garden, and that's when you could see your action heroes live. And you only saw them one day a week. You didn't see them like they're on every day, or now they're accessible online and all that stuff. So it was you needed to go there to see them live.
We could see them and they could see us. And we often had the same seats as we discussed before. Right. And, they start to associate that, and seeing the same people in the same seats, there's kind of that bond there,
Right.
And it does have that.
Bruce, that's your genre too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Were
the arenas slowly dying out by then?
So I can tell you, so going to the Civic Center, at the Poughkeepsie Civic Center, Mid-Hudson Civic Center, whatever you want to call it, it used to be an all-night affair. It would start at, say, 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, and it would be going until 1:30 in the morning. They would film several TV tapings. You'd have the who of everything was there. Hulk Hogan was there. Everybody. Yeah, you name it. And then late 86, early 87.
Okay.
All of a sudden, it went to be B shows. Because the arena itself only held 3,000 people, and all of a sudden WWF was doing those ridiculous shows. So now all of a sudden it was on the B show and C show circuit. So I went from being spoiled and seeing this ridiculous cards to all of a sudden, I think the last main event I saw was it was Billy Jack Haynes against Hercules Hernandez in a chain match.
Wow.
And I mean, there went from being 25 matches on the card to 5.
Yeah,
that's when I think the money grab was in for Vince, because he knew he had so much talent. You had an A, B, and C squad. And one of the things I remember reading in Bobby Heenan's book, I think I told you guys this earlier one time, In Bobby Heenan's book, the Paul Orndorff-Hulk Hogan feud was so hot that they actually performed three times in one night on a Saturday, like a few times a month. They would be in New York for their match on the East Coast. They'd go to the Midwest in Chicago and wrestle before the halftime there, or intermission. And then they'd fly out to be in L.A. by the time the main event gone. And they did that for like a few months. And that was money. So if you think about the amount of talent that Vince McMahon had at that time, how do you fill those arenas with main eventers when your main eventers are flying from East Coast to Midwest to West Coast? What happens then? The product suffers because you're going to get these B matches. I mean, I don't know. I think Pro Wrestling USA was going on at that time too, right? Sergeant Slaughter was reenacting his boot camp matches with the Iron Sheik. They were off on their own doing things. So that's where I think a lot of the attendance started to suffer. For me, it was looking up at the balcony at the Garden and seeing only half the rafters full.
Yeah.
You could see from the ringside to the top and your ears are ringing. I remember my son was young and I took him to the Garden in the early 90s. And we saw Shawn Michaels take on, Ultimate Warrior in a cage match with Sherry Martel. And the spotlights were just on the ring because you couldn't show the crowd because it was just ringside only. Nobody was in the balcony. And that was a house show.
Oh, wow.
And then that's when I was like going, okay, something's changed here. I mean, the product is a little stale and all that, but you do want to see wrestling live and the fans weren't coming out. They weren't buying it. I don't know if it was a generational thing, but the attendance did suffer.
It begs the question, was there overexposure because of cable, you know?
He saturated it. He saturated the networks with everything. And, you know, like I said, going back to Bruce, when you said that, you know, they stopped doing those, the field house or the civic centers when they stopped filming those. And then they do these arena shows and showed one match from that arena and one match from that arena. When you turned on TV, you didn't know what was going on or who was what or whatever storyline was taking place, because some of the storylines were regionalized.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, Benny, what about you? House shows. When's the last time you went to a house show?
It was actually in 1987 in Hagerstown, Maryland.
Oh, that was your last one? Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, and this goes back to, you know, before when they went national, that I, living in Long Island, New York, I could go 12 times a year to the Nassau Coliseum. I could go 12 times a year to the Garden. There were spot shows at the Comac Arena, the Island Garden. And then if I wanted to drive a little bit to White Plains, sure. I mean, I could have went to see wrestling 40 times a year.
Wow.
If I wanted to do it. You know, and I mean, what even better though, if you lived in Florida in the late 70s, where you had wrestling at the Homer Hesterly, you know, every Tuesday night, I think it was.
Wow.
I mean, every Tuesday night. So that's 50. And you know, if you felt like getting in your car and you went to Orlando, you could watch another 50. You could watch wrestling hundreds of times a year. And you talk about, you know, these guys are seeing you, you know, Bugsy McGraw, Kevin Sullivan,
Bugsy McGraw,
Mike Graham. Yeah. All these guys, you know, seeing you every week. And there was a bond, I believe.
Sure.
Yeah. I think they really appreciated the fact that these people, you know, this was a middle class thing, a blue collar thing, rather, that these people are spending their hard earned money to watch these guys. And I think they truly appreciate it. But that's where I think wrestling that's what wrestling was meant to be.
Yeah.
I don't think wrestling was meant to be sitting on your couch watching it. I think wrestling was meant to be going to a smoke-filled arena, you know, sitting in the third row, paying $4 for a seat. Now, I know I'm in a time warp right now, but I think that's that was the wrestling I grew up with and the wrestling I'll always love.
Foxhole Willie says we were overeating on wrestling. You guys agree with that?
After a while, like, what? I mean, once cable came into being? Absolutely. I mean,
we were
glutted. I mean, we had more than we could possibly eat.
Yeah, that was crazy. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, so before we – I know we're getting late on time here and so forth because we want to keep this to an hour and so forth. What's everybody got coming up there, Bruce? What do you got coming up?
Well, let's see. We've got – next Thursday, we've got the 30 at 7 p.m., followed by DeMonte and the Pharaoh Show. So hopefully one of you guys can dethrone Dan. He's bragging about this. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with you guys. I'll give you the Venmo account number again.
I'm telling you right now, every time they get 12 points in the final round, that is my – I know I'm done. I got to get past that 12 mark. I got to get past that.
Bruce, 12. I can't send you any money because I have to go to Walgreens tomorrow and buy a big giant pot of Vaseline.
Oh, second honeymoon?
Right. Yeah, I screwed up on the first one watching wrestling, right?
There you go. Phil, what do you got going on? You got anything coming up this week?
Well, I can't wait to be a part of the Whitey Bulger show, I have to say.
Yes, Monday night.
You know, I've read so much, and just it's been such a part of our culture here. So I'm going to kind of brush up on some of my my notes and reading and come prepared.
Are we doing that live, Benny? Are we doing that live?
Well, I mean, if we can get a producer, yeah, we can do that live. Wouldn't that be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be good. I mean, Whitey Bulger was a fixture in my life growing up. I know that. So
yeah,
it's going to be me and three Bostonians. That's solid gold.
Yeah, right, man.
We should find out if we get James Connolly in on this. Call the prison, see if he's allowed a phone call.
Yeah, maybe he can call.
We'll get Zip Connolly in.
Zip Connolly.
We'll send him a call. We'll send him a calling card.
Call Howie Carr too. He'd be
Phil,
great.
That reminds me. Remember Channel 7 Zip Rizzeppa? He was the only one that reported on wrestling back then on Channel 7.
That's wild. Yeah.
Zip Rizzeppa. I was like, oh my God. I think he's like on the NFL Network now or something like that. And I'm like, oh my God.
We have Kevin Lemanowitz, who's a weatherman here. Oh, yeah. He's a huge wrestling fan. So he sometimes interviews them now locally. He's good.
Yeah, he gets them to do the weather at the top of the hour.
Yeah.
Kevin Lemanowitz is cool.
Good
and
dude.
They had DDP on there in the mornings and all that stuff. So
DDP, good friend of Gene Levanchi, too. Gene, on Channel 25.
Waffle native. Gotta love it. Love it. Nice.
Yeah.
J.A. Will, yes. I went to the Nassau Coliseum many, many times to see Dr. J. Dr. J and Rick Barry are my two all time favorite basketball
players. Rick Barry, he diaper shot, right? The foul line? He would shoot. Didn't Rick Barry shoot like that?
He had that little underhand, amazing free throw. I mean, always over 90%, led the league most years in accuracy. Great, you know, two great ball players.
There was one player for the Celtics that made me want to be a better free throw shooter in high school, and that guy, his name was Rick Roby. Rick Roby. He was a Celtics back then. He couldn't hit a foul shot to save your soul.
I remember.
Oh, my God. Hey, Larry Bird.
Foxhole Willie says Whitey Bulger was Chris Nyland, formerly of the Bruins, father-in-law. Wow. Really? I think I remember that, too.
Okay.
I wonder if I know Foxhole Willie. Oh, with Mark Bulger. Huh.
I don't know how he could. How could he be? He was never.
Bulger had one kid. He died, so it had to be my
dad. One child that, you know, they died at five years old. But
yeah, he did. Yeah.
Very tragic. You have to get Knuckles on the line on that one, too.
Yeah.
All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up here. For anybody got last thoughts on tonight's show? Or
no, it's a great job, Joe. What a great show, Joe.
We try.
I want to thank everybody out there. Comments out there were fantastic.
Yeah, Rick Roby played for Kentucky. Okay, Joe Will with the historical facts. You got to love this. I love having a chat like this. This is great.
He is a Southern sage, brother. Well,
who is Donna Reed's gynecologist?
Dr. Marcus Welby. No, Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
Trapper John, MD.
There you go. Hawkeye Pierce.
And Ben Casey.
There you go.
Dr. Zorba.
All right, folks. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank everybody who's tuning in live as well as on the replay. Don't forget, folks, hit that share button, the like button, the subscribe button, whatever button is below you. Let everybody know that Monty and the Pharaoh channel is growing. We got a lot of exciting programs coming up. Whitey Bulger coming up next week. The 30, which is, Bruce, you're going to test one of the most and only popular game show, wrestling game show on YouTube, right? I don't know any other wrestling game show that's on YouTube right now.
It's an original.
And we've got more coming. We've got a lot more coming on the channel. I can't wait.
And I have a feeling there's going to be a Missy Beefcake part 2, possibly 3 coming up, because there was a lot to unpack there. We got to filter.
Like Yogi Berra says, it ain't over till it's over. It definitely is not over.
It's not, definitely not over. I think we should get Valentine in on this. Maybe have like a little sit down. That'd be kind of
maybe neat. On Valentine's Day. That'd be great.
Oh, that would be cool. Huh?
There you go. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us here. Like I said, thank you for tuning in and all that stuff. We'll be back next Friday, same time. We're going to, what's a good topic for next week? You guys got anything you guys press that we want to talk about? Wrestling remembered?
What's your favorite territory? Maybe. I don't know.
Ooh, territory days. We can food for thought. Maybe we'll hit the chat up with that. Ask him anybody. What do you want to see on Wrestling 30?
Yeah, let the people out there decide.
Yeah, maybe we'll most violent or scariest angle or match. I don't know.
My goodness.
Blood and guts, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, God. All right. Until next time, guys. I'm Joe What a Day Lowry for Bruce Butler. El Presidente Phil DeCesare and the player Benny Schuyler. You guys have a great week. Thanks for watching Wrestling Remembered.
Stay warm.